You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report. Where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
It is Friday, March 25th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is casual Friday, but we are anything but casual this Friday. On the phone, we're starting off tight. We have an amazing program for you today. Obviously, it's Friday, so we'll have Chris Rosen here to tell us a couple of movie selections. Later in the program, a special bonus guest, Andy Kindler. Hilarious, angry, apparently Jewish, had no idea. And on the phone, a listener of this program, Wes Creek. You can see his blog at spacetravelsacrime.com. And tweet him at Wes in Japan. We will have all that linked at the majority.fm site. Wes is living in Japan, and he has decided... Well, Wes, why don't you tell us what's happening?
All right. First off, my last name's Cheek, by the way, but that's okay. Everyone messes up.
What did I say?
Cheek with an H. You said Creek, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, casual Friday. I'm in my pajamas anyway. It's all right. What's going on is I live in Kyoto, which is kind of far away from... the earthquake and tsunami damage. It's a little further south. But, it was kind of the coverage, if you've been watching in the American coverage and the Japanese coverage, it's kind of been iffy at best. Sometimes good, sometimes okay. I don't want to be too critical. But the citizen journalism that's been going on Twitter and even Facebook and programs like yours has been exceptional, I think. And I think we need to follow up on that. So I'm going up there myself. I'm on spring break. I'm a school teacher usually, so I'm on spring break. So I'm going up in about 6 hours. I'm going to leave and drive up there and kind of document what's going on in the disaster area and the kind of impending refugee crisis that might or might not be happening right now.
So what, before we get into sort of just the, how long do you plan to be up there first?
Well, it kind of depends. Right now I've kind of budgeted out for a week because I'm kind of just doing it myself right now. So it's me and one other photographer from in town are going up, and we rented a car for the week. We've kind of figured out places to stay for the week. So right now it's just for this 1 week. If things work out and we're able to stay up there, we might go a little longer.
And tell me, what is the sense in the country? I mean, are people panicked about what could potentially take place? I mean, obviously, people must be sort of just in a daze as well, just from the tsunami and the earthquake.
Well, it's really strange because, like I said, I live in the Kansai region, which is further south, and nothing really happened here. The ground shook, and kind of we ran out of school and stood around for a few minutes, and then we thought, oh, that was strange. It's over, and then you saw on TV what happened. But it's kind of not a school's been running normally here. The stores are running normally. There aren't really many shortages. We're not getting vegetables from up north. That's the only big change. And there's no water, bottled water on the shelves. But there's not a sense of panic. If anything, there's kind of a weird sense of normalcy here, which seems kind of out of step. I mean, people are it's all that's on TV every night. And people are concerned. But no one here is really panicking, I don't think.
And my understanding is that people are not drinking tap water in much of the country.
Right, and in Tokyo especially is where they found the radiation yesterday, which actually Japan has higher standards than most of the world, so it's high. I mean, nobody wants radiation in their tap water. It's kind of scary, but If this was other countries in the world, it might not even have been stopped. But in the area I live in most areas of Japan, that has no effect at all. But I was in the convenience store last night, and the old woman was buying all of the bottled water. Hmm. So I guess some people are reacting to it here.
And so give me a sense, where exactly do you plan to head first, and why have you chosen that location?
Well, first, we're going to drive up to Iwate Prefecture, which is kind of just north of Miyagi Prefecture, which is the hardest affected. And Iwate, I'm going to drive to Ichinoseki, is a town kind of an hour back from the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be staying out of there because they still have power and internet, so I can get the photos up that we'll be taking and still be in kind of contact. I'm going to drive in and out of the disaster area each day if I can. And so I'm going to be heading first to Iwate, to Ichinoseki, and then down to kind of the affected areas that you're seeing on TV, like Ichinomaki and that area along the coast there. And then there's also some English teachers, some foreigners living in Japan, who are working in Fukushima Prefecture, who have been volunteering and working in the disaster areas since the earthquake struck, and I'm going to try to meet up with them and kind of document their story on what's going on with them in Fukushima.
And what kind of safety precautions do you need to take? I mean, my understanding is that it continues to be, the evacuated area seems to be within 20 miles
right.
of Fukushima Daiichi
right.
plant. Just give me a sense of what you're...
For the radiation, for safety. Yeah, I think the main thing to do is just avoid that area. You know, I'm definitely not going to go into that area. And if I go into Fukushima at all, it's going to be far away from the nuclear reactor. So most, I think, maybe watching it in America, it's hard to tell. The tsunami-affected area and the nuclear-affected area are kind of distant from each other. Hmm. Not severely, but they're not, like, right on top of each other. So the tsunami affected the nuclear area, but the main damaged area is north of there. So it's a related catastrophe, but they're kind of operating separately right now. And so kind of my concern is that because of the nuclear thing is very, very important, but some of the attention is being lost on all the people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are living in school gyms right now and stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Is there a sense in the country that, I mean, I don't know, it may be just simply too early for people to be sort of taking this type of perspective, but is there a sense that the horrible tragedy of the tsunami and the earthquake are being overshadowed by this, or do people perceive it as being legitimately overshadowed? Or,
well, it's strange, you know, because my frame of reference is I work at a junior high school, and so I talk to the teachers every day, and their kind of reaction is split between the news says this about the radiation, but I don't really trust it, and wondering kind of why the government isn't doing more for the refugees and the people who lost their homes. I mean, I think the government's starting to move on things, but it's been a little slow, and people aren't really sure about why that delay was, and people aren't really sure if they can trust the information coming from the news and the government about radiation.
Do you think this is changing the relationship of the Japanese people to its government? I mean, my sense is that there's more faith in the government, perhaps maybe than we're experiencing in this country.
Well, that's a tricky issue, and I mean, maybe this is my opinion. I'm sure there's plenty of Japanese experts who might disagree with me, but I think that's been played up on American television as saying, oh, Japanese people really trust the government. I don't know if that's true. I think that Japanese people are very skeptical of the government, but at a very base level, they expect the government to do their jobs. Like, that's kind of different from America. Like, I think lots of times in America, we just assume, well, the government's going to mess it up, that it's the government. In Japan, people are like, you know, we don't like these guys, but we expect them to, at the very base level, do what they're supposed to do the work that they're supposed to do. And so I think, you know, this kind of disaster is their job. It's their job to work on it, and people are kind of confused about why it's taking a while to get that worked out.
All right, and it's just, you know, we're going to let you go, and we're going to hopefully have updates from you over the next week, and of course,
yeah, I hope so.
As you tweet stuff out, we will keep an eye on this, and we will retweet it, and obviously any photos. But is there anything else you think we should know as you head off to do this?
Well, I don't know. I guess I'll be finding out a lot more tomorrow when I get there on the scene. I'm kind of at a remove now, too, and all my information is off of TV and the Internet. So I'll get up there and be up there on the weekend and I guess call on to you guys on your Monday, and I'll kind of let you know what's happening on the ground there.
Great.
So I hope to have more information for you then.
All right. Wes Cheek, thank you so much for joining us. Wes in Japan is his Twitter account. That may be the best real-time way to follow him at this point. And I assume you'll be going to be posting stuff at your site as well.
Yep. I've been keeping updates on the kind of progress of the trip. So if you want to check up on it, check on their spacetravelsacrime.com.
And it's not space travel is a crime. It's space travels.
No, it's not.
A crime.
Yeah, if I'd known that this was, if I'd known it wasn't just going to be an inside joke between my friends, then I would have made it more legible, but unfortunately, that's the way things work.
There you go. You never know, Wes. All right. Well, good luck.
Never
be safe. And thanks for checking in with us, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Yep. All right.
Bye-bye.
See you then.
So, Wes Cheek, I mean, he's not, we're not the, he obviously has his blog and his thing, but he's our guy in Japan. And we'll be, you know, sending back reports on what's happening there in an unfiltered manner. And, you know, I hope he stays safe. All right. Before we get to Chris Rosen, I want to talk about a little bit about what's happening in Libya, because I got an email from a listener, Kathy. Says, I strongly disagree with your support for U.S. involvement in Libya and for your hesitancy in perhaps supporting targeted assassination. I'm just starting the book Gaza in Crisis, which with conversations with Noam Chomsky and Ilan Pop, and right away the apparent overwhelming hypocrisy of the U.S. claiming to be intervening militarily to protect civilians. Just for one example, 200 civilians in Gaza massacred by Israel on the first day of bombing in Gaza in 2008, a stated policy by Israel and supported by the U.S. and such folks as Thomas Friedman that it's okay to target and kill civilians in order to educate them and collectively punish them, to turn them on their elected leaders. Did anyone intervene then? Look, is the U.S. government, is U.S. Policy hypocritical because it does not provide the type of support for civilians, whether it's in Gaza or whether it's been in the West Bank at various times, frankly, whether it's been in southern Lebanon in terms of the Israelis, or whether it's we're talking about Yemen, or we're talking about Bahrain, or Iran, or anywhere else in the country, in the world, frankly. Yes. But does that mean that because the United States would be could be considered hypocritical, that they should not protect civilians who may be massacred? Do the motives and intent of the U.S. government, do they factor in here? Of course. Is there any doubt in my mind, like I said yesterday, that we would be doing this for the Libyans if there was no oil there? I find it hard to believe. And I find it hard to believe that France and Britain would sign off on this. I find it hard to believe that anybody in the Security Council would sign off on it. I find it hard to believe that NATO, which has now essentially taken command, and we'll get to that in a moment, would sign off. None of these countries would. I don't know. It's possible they would. But let's assume for the sake of argument that they wouldn't. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to assume. There is no doubt that the citizens of Benghazi are very fortunate that their country has oil. But that does not mean that we shouldn't support the prevention of their wholesale slaughter. The simple fact that the United States rarely does things for the right reason, or maybe never does the things for the right reason, doesn't mean that we should not support an action that is going to have the right results. Now, with that said, I would even go a little further. We have a situation here where the UN has explicitly signed off on this. We have a situation where the Arab League petitioned the UN to sign off on this action and remained supportive of it. despite the fact that they have wavered. We now have a situation where all of NATO, that means that Germany and Turkey, have now agreed to what to impose the no-fly zone plus, essentially, that the UN called for. Do I have the ability to say that without this protection, the people of Benghazi would have been slaughtered? I don't. I don't have that expertise. We need a mechanism to determine this. It's not going to come from some guy sitting in an office with Evan and Dorsey. And frankly, it's not going to come from you. There is no process that would be suitable for everyone. What we can do is we can say that we can set up a process, and that process is essentially the UN. This is fundamentally different from what we did in Iraq. In Iraq, our invasion and occupation and intervention was illegal by any definition of international standards and by any by the UN Charter. There was not an uprising that was taking place in Iraq when we went there. You could argue that maybe 10 years earlier there was an opportunity, and I think you would have a good argument. But it wasn't happening at that time. There was no imminent threat to any of any mass killings of civilians in Iraq when we intervened there. To the contrary, it was swarming with UN weapons inspectors. And I think just because you may not trust the U.S. government's intentions, which I think is a perfectly legitimate perspective to take, if the United States does what it said it was going to do, go no further than is mandated by the UN Charter, they can have a policy of regime change, but if they do not act upon it militarily, I have no problem with it. The real danger is that they will go beyond the UN mandate. But as of now, it does not seem to be the case. Juan Cole talked about on yesterday, the 24th, the accomplishments of the UN no-fly zone. At that time, he said Qatar is expecting to be flying missions over Libya, that the Arab League had not changed its mind. Since then, Qatar has now committed to doing it this weekend, and the United Arab Emirates are going to include 12 planes. So this is very much a genuine coalition and headed, if not commanded, but at least the catalyst here were other Arab nations. He said, number two, Turkey has agreed to use, and this is as of yesterday, this is prior to NATO, of which Turkey is a member, signing off on taking control of this no-fly zone, agreed at that time to use its navy to help enforce a boycott on the Gaddafi regime. Gaddafi's air force has been completely, virtually no longer exists. Tobruk, no longer in danger of being attacked and its inhabitants massacred. It has a major petroleum depot, was in danger of being taken forces by Gaddafi. Benghazi, no longer in danger. Misrata, given a brief reprieve on Wednesday, and in fact now it's in much better shape. An aid ship was able to land in Misrata because of the no-fly zone. He goes on. But just jumping ahead to today, the Libya no-fly zone will pass from the U.S., in terms of leadership, to the 28-nation NATO command. So this is going according to plan. Signs are emerging that isolated pro-Qaddafi forces may be seeking negotiations with the Benghazi-based liberation movement. The million-strong Warfala tribe appears to have flipped allegiance twice already in the past month and could easily do so again. This is from Juan Cole. The United Arab Emirates has committed 12 fighter jets to doing patrols, joining Qatar, which has pledged to begin flying missions this weekend. The no-drive zone, this is the no-fly zone plus, essentially, pursued by France, Britain, and the United States, is already bearing fruit on the ground. There were three major aggressive campaigns being waged by the Gaddafi forces. As the UN allies began intervening, Zintan in the southwest, Misrata just east of Tripoli on the coast, and Ajibaya in the east, south of rebel headquarters Benghazi, two of them ceased on Thursday, furthering a forestalling further massacre of civilians in these major population centers. Debaya remained in the arena of contest, but the liberation movement now controls most of the oil city where there were reports of negotiations. The liberation movement in Misrata has now claimed to have retaken it. So look, do I trust American intentions in this situation? No, but I don't have to. Do I know for sure that there would have been civilian massacres in the absence of this no-fly zone plus? No, and I can't ever know that. All I can know is, are we strengthening the process of some type of international law in which to determine when and under what circumstances we or the rest of the world can intervene upon the sovereignty of another country? Every time we do that, in my mind, every time we strengthen that process, we diminish the ability of that process to be abused like it was in Iraq. That's why I support what we're doing up to this point. Is there a danger that it could sort of spiral out of control and we are dragged into a quagmire? Yes. But do I think the lives of those hundreds of thousands of civilians was worth it? Do I think the strengthening of these tools for some type of international law and a process in which this is determined is worth it? I think so. And I guess we'll just have to see whether or not our leadership in this country can be trusted. And I'm hesitant to do so, but again, this now it's under the auspices of NATO. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're gonna get more casual now because it's Casual Friday, and we'll come back. And we'll talk to Mr. Chris Rosen of, what is it, MovieLine.com? All right, we'll be right back after this.
Just dropping the ball.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here's your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
How did you get that job, Chris Rosen?
Oh, a lot of hard work, you know. That's how you get jobs, Sam.
Yeah, I guess
so. You put yourself out there. You get stuff. You know, stuff happens for you.
I've heard rumors to that effect. I haven't quite experienced it myself, but I understand that's the way it works. Now, people should understand that Chris Rosen is not only the executive vice president, senior reporter, movie line critic from MovieLine.com. He's also a former board op from Air America, and has really pulled himself up by his bootstraps.
That's right, Sam. Look at that. I'm waiting for the butt part of this story.
I'm just telling you, people are like,
hey, you know, Air America,
why do you have Chris Rosen on?
We have a great rapport. That's why you have me on.
No, I have you on because we have a great rapport, and which is a rapport that was built over your time as a board op. And
right.
And so there you have it. You know, Dorsey's leaving the show. Dorsey's next week is going to be Dorsey's last week here. And
I heard something to that effect.
You're going to be the last connection, regular presence on from Air America on this program.
Unbelievable. I mean, I guess that's good and bad. But, you know, Air America, a lot of talented folks, Sam, as we know.
Of course. Of course. Now, I should give you an update on what happened last weekend.
Let me hear.
Wait, what did you suggest last weekend?
We did the fighter and
Okay.
Inside Job.
Inside Job. Nikki wouldn't watch Inside Job.
Okay.
I'm going to have to watch that. She just was not in the mood for a documentary, but we watched the fighter.
Yes.
And I give it a thumbs up.
Nice.
It was pretty good. I mean, at first I was a little bit like, eh. And now what I didn't realize is that Scott Silver was one of the writers.
Yes.
Now, it's Name Drop Friday, so I have no problem saying this. Scott and I went to the same high school. I'm very good friends with his sister. And in fact, 16 years ago, I was in one of the first movies he ever wrote at AFI. He wrote a little short film that I was the lead in that he didn't shoot. And I've known Scott. I re-met him out in, I don't know if I ever met him in Worcester, but I met him out in California, and, you know, we're friendly. I mean, I'm not, I don't hang out with him, but it's Name Drop Friday, and there's no reason for me not to tell people that.
And that's a name drop. And look at that.
You know, his name came up there, and I'm like, you know, it's always hard for me to watch movies that my friends have written, or because I have a lot of friends who make
Right. Famous. You have a lot of talented folks. I'm sure. Michael Showalter.
Michael Showalter. Andy Kindler is going to come on very shortly.
I mean, the roster of talent that you have in your Rolodex is just unmatched.
Oh, definitely. Are you kidding? Now, we enjoyed that. We didn't watch, but I'm going to.
And Inside Job.
Inside Job. And so, what do you have for us this week?
Well, this week,
I should remind people who listen for the first time that we have Chris Rosen tells us what's on free Netflix streaming or on demand, regular cable or Amazon, because I now have a Roku and I can get Amazon on demand. And because I'm a Prime member, I get some of them for free and I'm not allowed to go out to see movies in theaters. So this is the way we do it.
And it's cheaper. I mean, why would you want to go spend $13-14 to go see something in the theater when you have to pay for two tickets?
Because I got a shitty little TV.
Right. Well, there you go. You can watch, you know, we'll work on that. But anyway, Netflix On Demand this week, you know, I know we didn't really do one last week because we did Inside Job. I would suggest Inside Job again. I think that's the prime placement documentary that you should watch this weekend. That's on Amazon. You know, you'll have to probably pay for it. But Netflix, not a lot of slim pickings in the Netflix documentaries, though I wanted to suggest a classic documentary in honor of March Madness. Hoop Dreams is on Netflix Instant Watch.
Hoop Dreams.
It's a fabulous documentary.
It's actually a great documentary. I haven't seen it in years. And I will say this. This is apropos because next week, I know you're going to talk about Who's the Caboose. But
yes. We have to get that to me. We have to discuss that.
It'll be coming to you any minute.
Okay.
Who's the Caboose? We shot on digital video and transferred it to film. We were the first film to do that. That was a narrative film, and we did it at the same place where they did this with Hoop Dreams.
Look at that.
That's how we knew about that process at 4MC at the time it was called.
It's a great movie. I mean, I'm sure you've probably seen it, and your listeners out there have probably seen it, but it's definitely worth watching again because it's almost 20 years old at this point, which is hard to believe. So,
it is hard to believe because it had just come out when we did Who's the Caboose.
Not to make us feel old. And then on Time Warner On Demand On Demand this week, the new releases for this week are kind of garbage. It was How Do You Know and The Tourist, both of which were terrible movies.
Never even heard of
those. So forget those. Here's a terrible movie. Well, what people thought was a terrible movie, and I don't think we did this before. It's The Switch with Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman. You're looking at me like you're confused.
Is this a point of departure, or is that where you're going to stop in terms of the recommendation?
No, I was waiting for you to respond to it. It came out over the summer. A lot of people were kind of down on it because it's a Jennifer Aniston movie, and the marketing campaign was really bad. But as it turns out, it's really about like Jason Bateman's character. It's based on a short story by Jeffrey Eugenides, or however you say his name, who wrote Middlesex and The Virgin Suicides. You familiar with these books?
Sure.
you don't seem interested in this at all. I'm telling you, it's a very charming movie. It's a little rom-com. It's a little slight, but it's very good. And Jason Bateman has great chemistry with Jennifer Aniston. And I think it's definitely a worthy watch for on demand. I mean, you know, what else are you going to watch this weekend?
I feel like that's like the type of movie that's like, oh, I'm so drunk. I can't even.
It's a cute rom-com. You were just saying that you didn't want to see something. Inside
Is that
Job.
The free one? Is that the free one?
No, that's on demand. It's like $4.
That ain't happening.
Well, it's either that or How Do You Know, which I don't think you'd like with Reese Witherspoon.
And what about the Carlos? Tourist. What about Carlos?
Is Carlos on demand?
Is it on demand or Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Well, he already gave Netflix. To be fair, he already gave
it. I will say Carlos is a great movie. It's very long. I mean, you don't have time right now. You're going to watch a 5-hour movie?
I got news for you. I would rather watch Showa than that movie that you saw. I would rather sit down like Saturday night and watch Showa for 5 hours than watch.
I think there are at least a 9-hour version of
you just suggested to pay $4 for that.
I think
I'll wait for that
Showa
to come out on Netflix.
Well, you know, maybe it will. Who knows?
What's the name of that movie now?
The Switch.
The Switch.
It's cute. It's a cute movie.
Jesus, I would have to be so drunk.
Maybe you'll be drunk.
I don't even have access to the type of drugs anymore that I would have to ingest before I could watch that.
I can imagine,
I just had 3.5 grams of mushrooms. This fucking Bateman, Aniston thing
blew my mind. You don't think Bateman is funny?
No, I do think Bateman's funny.
Bateman is funny. You know, and he's doing Bateman. I mean, he does the Bateman thing.
I know.
Which is fine. Great. And Jennifer Aniston is cute, and Jeff Goldblum is in it. He's classic.
Yes, God, I can't get enough of Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum's funny.
I know Jeff Goldblum. I met him.
Did you really?
I met him.
You look like you guys would get along.
I met him actually, years and years ago. I met him at when Sarah Silverman and I were out in L.A. Her sister had dinner one night, and I don't know why Jeff Goldblum showed up. I think she was friends with Laura Silverman. I don't know.
I can help you with the name drop. This is another one you're probably not going to want to spend the money on because it's $9.
Yeah.
But Sarah Silverman has a new movie out today. It's called Peep World with a bunch of people.
Yeah, I didn't hear great things.
I didn't hear great things either, but it's on if people want to watch it. It is $9, though, on demand.
No. Just, all right. I'll wait for that to
so
get
wait,
cheaper.
Wait for that. Wait
I'm
for that
not
to go
free. Get one of those preemptive type of things that I'm not interested in.
But anyway, that's out today also.
All right. Well, Chris Rosen, thank you so much for joining us.
Sam, we'll talk next
week. Now, listen.
If I don't get it by Monday, I'll talk to you. Maybe I can come in and pick it up.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. Chris Rosen, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, Andy Kindler. And, we got a lot of things to talk about Andy Kindler. You have a question for Andy Kindler?
Oh, you know, just say what's up. I'm a big fan. How about that?
That's a great question. That's a senior editor question.
Does he read movieline.com?
Okay. That's a great question.
And it's a plug.
Yes. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
We'll be right back after this, folks. Such a pleasure. It really is a genuine pleasure to welcome our next guest on the program. If you're not aware of his work, well, frankly, then you know what? Turn off your computer or however you're listening to this, turn it off. You don't deserve to listen. Although, I guess there's a value in learning something new, too. So, Andy Kindler, welcome to the program.
I listen via transistor radio.
You do?
That's yes, I do. And also, before I start, full disclosure, I am owned by Viacom.
All right, fair enough. So we don't have full rights to this. Hey, let me ask you a question. The Switch. Did you see that?
The Switch.
Yeah, the one with Bateman and Jennifer Aniston.
No, you know, I saw Grown Ups on a Plane, and that I thought I was so discouraged by that that I haven't looked at anything that involves electronic video or moving images since then.
I just got recommended The Switch by our Friday movie guy, because I can only watch Netflix streaming or on demand, because I'm not allowed to go to the theater because of my child and my wife, essentially.
So Justine Bateman is switching places with, isn't that what Steve Martin goes inside of Lily Tomlin's body? Is that the movie?
That movie was pretty good. This is the one, I think, where Jason Bateman must be like a very wealthy stockbroker. And I think this is where Jennifer Aniston is like a beggar on the street. And the stockbrokers have a bet or something like that. Some other stockbroker. I can't remember. I don't know.
Well, the thing that's amazing is that I'm sure these are the kind of movies that screenwriter, from as a small child, this is the kind of thing he dreamed of writing.
Yeah.
Just like when the movie, this is from my, I don't want to launch into my accent, but when the movie The Dilemma came out, which was the Kevin James, Vince Vaughn vehicle that we all were awaiting, I have my own dilemma. Should I not see this in the movie theater, or wait and avoid it when it comes to cable?
Yes, that's a tough decision to make. I mean, because... you've almost got twice the work if you decide to avoid it in the movie theater, because then you've got to avoid it again.
Right. I had to actually have my electricity shut off for 4 months. I didn't want any mix-ups. I didn't want all of a sudden Kevin James is there out of nowhere. I hope by this interview to burn every other bridge that I possibly could have constructed.
Listen,
my bridge to Jank, I'm hoping, is totally burned.
One of the things that I knew was going to happen here was that not only were you going to burn some bridges, but you were going to burn bridges for me too. But you know what? I mean, it's at this point, I can't tell you how many I've managed to burn bridges in so many different industries at this point that I think is impressive. I mean, because you've burned them. I mean, you've shat on the industry for, gosh, an extended period of time.
Yeah, I decided to do. I decided to go the one extra step, which is to do a speech every year at a comedy festival where people could actually, if they want to hear the negative things I'm saying, I'm actually saying, go here to this room and hear me talk badly about all the presidents of every network.
That's right. You go to the Just for Laughs comedy festival where everybody in the industry goes, and
right.
It's sort of like a one-stop shopping. You're almost basically saying, hey, you may have heard rumors that I've shat on you behind your
right.
back. Come tonight so you can see me do it to your face.
And then I always go the extra mile. I go, it's like, do I have to say that Tina Fey was on the cover of Overrated magazine? I mean, do I have to go to that degree with it? Then I start losing half my friends. Because a lot of my anger is based on envy and jealousy.
Right. I mean, that's
except when it comes to Jank. That's not true with Jank, though. I do not want to be Jank on any level.
We will get there. But that's the thing. Is like you and Marin sort of like share. Well, I mean, sort of a lot of comedians share that. But and Marin just sort of does it. Or you know, now he's now of course he's completely grown up. I mean, he's completely matured. He's his podcast is psychologically healed him.
That guy is a. I mean, I don't throw around the word genius unless it's in relation to me, you, and Mark Marin. But we three are genius. No, I really have to say that guy has. He was always funny, but he has, like, really stepped it up in terms of just being himself in every format. So I just love the guy.
Right.
But
no, that's true.
He's angry. I've been in, like, hotel situations with him. He will get angry at the ice machine instantly.
Believe me. I worked with him for a year. And now, didn't you guys go on, like, some tour with Eugene, too?
It was called I was very proud of the name. It was called Stand Uppity, comedy that makes you feel better about yourself and superior to others. And Eugene played the role of the guy who pretends that nothing gets on his nerves. So he just was like basically could sit in between the middle of Mark and me and basically look roll his eyes at both of us older Jews who still haven't mastered the zen of life.
I think I referred to that as the torture a waitress tour.
I mean, there were many, like
the waitresses who had to serve you food at any given point must have been like sort of just the greatest nightmare of their lives.
Well, Mark tells the story about, you know, it's basically three Jews in a Waffle House, you know, three Jews in an Applebee's. But the best thing that Mark actually does a whole long anecdote about is that we had a Jeep. We got into this long argument about whatever, you know, do you do what you believe in life? And then we had a GPS system, and we ended up, the GPS system said we got lost. And then the next thing we knew, the GPS system said, get on ferry. We had hit a dead end.
Get on ferry.
Get on ferry. Board ferry was the not the shortest distance. It was the shortest distance to where we wanted to go, but the ferry went once a day.
And so, hey, you know, I didn't tell you this, but I think I did tell you this. You know, Who's the Caboose is actually coming out next week.
That's my. I have two movie credits: Who's the Caboose, and as everyone knows, Green Flash, the volleyball movie that I'm, the cult volleyball movie I made.
Well, here's the you made that, or you?
I didn't make it. I was a athletic store customer for.
Here's the sad part. That has probably gotten far greater distribution than Who's the Caboose. I mean, we made Who's the Caboose 16 years ago, 13 years ago, I guess.
It's a classic, though. It is a classic. I love that movie.
And Andy's also in Pilot Season 2.
And I'm also, we're both in Bob's Burgers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're actually going in to do some pickups today, right?
Yeah, we call them voice re-records. I don't know what I'm talking about. Even when I try and sound impressive.
All right, well, listen, we got to take a break, and then we'll come back, and then I'm going to let you shit on...
Jank and, well, and MSNBC.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I that's the interesting thing, is that your Twitter feed, you know, this is a side of you that I never really was even aware of, that you were that sort of like sort of invested in politics and media. But we're going to take a break, for you, this will be like a special bonus, I guess, on the member show as we say goodbye to our regular audience. And we'll still stay live after this, and we'll take IMs coming up at Majority FM. We got Andy Kindler. We'll be right back after this. So you've got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me.